We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Welcome back to Overnight America. I'm KMOX. I'm Ryan Recker. We're joined now by a very special guest on the Quiver River Electric Celebrity Line. One of the biggest lies about healthcare. The article grabbed my attention on the Hill. Joining us now, the author, Dr. Dean Waldman. Thank you for joining KMOX.
Oh, my pleasure.
The biggest lie about healthcare. Hint, it involves the government. Well, it's hard for me to believe the government would ever lie to me. But the gist of this article, I think, is really popular. More government doesn't always correlate to more care, which is what we should be looking at when it comes to healthcare. And it's what the Senate is trying to figure out. So tell me the correlation between care and more government involvement.
Well, the more government involvement, that question is actually quite simple. The more government involvement means more regulation, more oversight, more compliance officers and bureaucrats and actuaries and agents, et cetera. And somebody has to pay their salaries and their benefit packages and pensions and so forth. That's healthcare spending, which is money that cannot, therefore, be used to pay a doctor or a nurse, a hospital, a pharmacist, a wheelchair manufacturer. So when you start looking at how much money the federal bureaucracy consumes, and by the way, it's the first dollar spent, what you find, and this is what I report at length in a book that I'm trying to get everybody to read called The Cancer in the American Healthcare System. Basically, when you do that analysis, which, of course, the government doesn't do for us, it doesn't account its own spending, it turns out over 40% of all healthcare spending goes to bureaucrats and actuaries and billers and coders and, in other words, people who never touch a patient or talk to a patient, and that leaves not enough money for the providers. I mean, you have to ask yourself as an American this question. Why is it that the U.S. is spending more money than anybody else on earth, and yet the reimbursement schedules, the amount of payments to Medicaid doctors is going down so low that now close to half of all U.S. doctors can't afford to see Medicaid patients? And the answer to that question, which I'll answer right now, is the money is going to the federal bureaucracy and therefore cannot be paid for patients' care.
I think a lot of people that support a single payer and they look at it from other countries and they say the exact same way you set up that statement, which was we spend way too much money on health care. And you look at other countries that have a single payer system, they spend a lot less and get better care. But they come to the conclusion that we need a single payer here in the United States. We should adapt to what other countries around the world are doing. Is that the answer here?
Well, the answer is no to that question. And when you say they're getting better care, they are getting better routine care. But if you need something sophisticated or something expensive or something chronic, the whole way that, for example, the United Kingdom, I went to school there, I know their system well, the United Kingdom controls its cost effectively by medical rationing. So they say, okay, well, we only have a certain number of burn units, and we only can afford a certain number of chemotherapy regimens or, you know, heart surgeries. So, you know, you're on a waiting list. And I will tell you that I had two mothers, one of whom is British, and my British mother at 78 broke her hip. And so they said, oh, yeah, hip replacement surgery is available to you. And, you know, it's for free. And, oh, by the way, it's going to take almost 3 years before you have your surgery. And I'm sitting here going, oh, great. So you're going to take my 78-year-old mother and put her in bed so that she is immobile. She's going to get obese. She's going to have a pulmonary embolus. She's going to get infection. She's going to get lung disease. And she's going to die before she gets her hip replacement. My point is that single payers all control their costs by medical rationing. Now, if the American people are willing to put up with that, which I frankly hope they are not, and God knows as a physician, I don't want the government telling me what I can't do or how long it's going to take me to operate on one of my babies, then okay, then those who want single payer understand that you're just bought yourself medical rationing.
Yeah. The journalist in Canada, Malcolm Gladwell, recently was on Meet the Press, and he kind of gave what was a harsh reality of a single-payer system, which he said he doesn't think here in America our legislators know what they want, because he said in Canada they had the discussion and they realized this is what we can do. So they said, if we're going to do this, we have to settle for less. So we have to be prepared to settle for less here in the United States and completely change everything, and we won't have the first-class healthcare system that we have now. That's what we need to be prepared to do, because we can't have it all, and that's what everyone wants right now.
Yeah, and that not. I would only change that sentence. It's not only what they want; it's what they expect. And because our politicians are unwilling to be leaders and to tell the people the truth, you've going to have to A, take responsibility for yourself. The government is not in charge of your health; you are. We will try to help you, but you have to take some responsibility. And B, there's only a certain number of dollars, so there are only two choices for the rationer of your care: you and your pocketbook, or the government. Take your choice.
Dr. Dean Waldman, his latest article on The Hill, The Biggest Lie About Healthcare. Really good conversation here. I've always wondered what happens to the innovation here in the United States if we were to change healthcare. Will we stop innovating because we can't afford to? I'll get his take on that coming up on Overnight America, KMOX.
Broadcasting from the KMOX Golden Oak Lending Studios. Golden Oak Lending, with fixed rates now in the twos. Ryan Recker. Overnight America. The two best things in your night on KMOX.
Welcome back. We continue talking healthcare with Dr. Dean Waldman. I always wondered what would happen to the drug manufacturers here in the United States. They make so many breakthrough discoveries here. If we were to go to a single-payer healthcare system and the demand's not there because people just expect the government to give it, but the government's not going to pay for those breakthroughs, what happens to medicine as a whole? Do we just stop innovating?
Yeah, and as a matter of fact, we have a demonstration. Again, one of these things that people don't talk about, and in that book, The Cancer in American Healthcare, I go into this in great detail. We have an absolute demonstration, namely the country Italy in 1990, I think two or three, I forget one of those years, finally came to the decision that drug costs were too expensive. So they put harsh drug controls, cost controls on their prices, and they basically told their pharmaceutical companies, hey, I don't care whether you're going to charge $5 for a pill. We're going to pay you 20 cents. That's the way it is. And too bad. Well, what happened within 3 years, Italy, which used to have a big R&D research and development pharmaceutical industry, was actually one of the more vibrant ones in Europe, ceased to exist. They literally have no manufacturing and no research and development, and are dependent on basically the United States for these new drugs and new procedures and new devices. Now, if we do the same thing and take away all profit motive from the pharmaceutical manufacturers or the device manufacturers, what's going to happen is they're going to say, okay, well, then, I'll go innovate somewhere else in cars or in aerospace or whatever, but they're not going to give us the new great miracles that we're getting. I'm not sitting here saying that they're not abusing the privilege of patent protection, because many of them are. But you probably know the story of EpiPen.
Oh, yeah. In okay, that terrible outcome with the guy buys it out and jumps the price up.
You got to look at it a little carefully. And the fact is that it's the FDA that has prevented three other companies, all of whom have auto injectors. I mean, the patent for an EpiPen is not on the epinephrine, which we've only had for about 45, 50 years. So you can't patent that. But what they patented was the injector, the self or auto injector. Well, there are three other companies that have their own designs for auto injectors, and the FDA won't let them out. So there is no competition to Mylon that makes the EpiPen. And so they're charging $600 a pop. I mean, it's obscene.
Yeah, Scarelli and still being investigated and under trial for all kinds of things, too.
Yes.
Dr. Waldman, one of your things that you wrote in the article here on the Hill, talking about what happened in New Mexico, where they increased coverage, but it decreased care.
Yes.
Can you talk about that?
Yes. Yeah, I'm on the board of directors of the New Mexico Health Exchange, and it makes me nauseous for what I'm going to say, because the bottom line of all this, by this I mean our healthcare system, the bottom line is healthy people and getting them care when they need it, where they need it, and a good quality of care, not coverage of people. That's not our end goal. Our end goal is people getting care. So what happened in New Mexico is that the state looked at Obamacare and looked at over $3 billion new federal dollars that would come into the state budget if they chose to expand Medicaid. So they said, wow, you know, that's going to double our state budget pretty close to. So they said yes, and they expanded Medicaid. The number of new enrollees, firstly, was much greater and much faster than anybody. I mean, hell, you're giving away free health care.
Yeah.
They say it isn't care, but they're giving away free. So over 300,000 people signed up within the first 2 years of expansion in the state of New Mexico. Well, a little minor problem, namely that the cost of the federal mandates was more than the amount of money that the state got from the federal government.
Mm-hmm.
So suddenly, New Mexico Medicaid had a shortfall of $417 million, which they sure as hell couldn't afford. So they said, well, we really don't have any choice. We have to pay for all these mandates because that's the federal law. So we're going to cut reimbursements to doctors, which the reimbursement schedules were already low. So what they ended up doing at the end of the day was they had all these new people who had new insurance and no doctors to care for them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What about another article you wrote? Healthcare is not a federal responsibility. So is it the responsibility of the government, or is healthcare a right here in the United States? What's your thoughts on that?
Those are two questions that obviously deserve answers. Start with the easy one, which is it a federal responsibility? And the answer is very clearly no. If you take a look at the U.S. Constitution, it is very clear that there are, you know, 10th Amendment, there are enumerated powers that go to the federal government. The federal government is responsible for security of the borders. The federal government is responsible for interstate commerce. The federal government is responsible for the military. Okay, clearly, they are defined in the Constitution. Is health care in any way defined in the Constitution? The answer is no, and I would remind people that five of the signatories to the Declaration of Independence were physicians, you know, MDs. Now, we can argue about MDs back in the 18th century, but be that as it may, they certainly thought about health care. Health care is not a federal responsibility. Now, yet the second part of that is, well, people think it is because they think they have a right mm-hmm. to health care. And if you have a right to health care, rights are, if you will, protected, you know, the Bill of Rights, protected by the federal government. That also is false, because if you look at the Bill of Rights, and we'll get to healthcare in a second, mm-hmm. but if you look at the Bill of Rights, you'll quickly see that it's really not a bill of personal rights. What it is a listing of the things that the federal government should not do so that you can have the right to free speech, the right to assemble, the right to pray or not pray, or religious freedom as you choose.
Uh-huh.
In other words, the Bill of Rights is really a bill of constraints against the federal government in the service of a single right that every American has, which is freedom. Now, if health care is a right, stop for a second and say, what is health care? Health care is the personal service of a nurse or a doctor to offered for money to a patient.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's not a right. That's a service. That's personal service. That's, if you will, my work product. And if it's a right, you don't pay for rights. And you can demand a right anytime and anywhere you want. You know, you have a right to free speech. You can speak what you want within the limit of not crying fire in a theater that isn't aflame.
Mm-hmm.
My point is, to have a right to health care means that you have to return slavery to the providers of health care.
Mm. That's part of it. The rights given by God that can't be taken away from you. It's not part of that in the Bill of Rights there.
I mean, yes, you have a right to life, but I would point out that, again, if you think about it for a second, the right to life is really a constraint against the government from killing you.
Yeah. No, it's the rights that the government can't take away or put on. It's what they can't do.
Yes.
And the idea that we need to be reliant on the government to provide the things we need, it's like saying, you know, the government should provide all of my housing, all of my food, and everything else. And then all I can think of is, let's go to countries where socialism's a really big thing, and then I would immediately look at Venezuela and how the people are revolting against that very system right now. 100 days they've been out in the streets revolting against the very thing that people are trying to propose here.
Well, you know that I think Winston Churchill said it best. Or no, it was Margaret Thatcher, but one of the two of them said, you know, socialism is great until you run out of other people's money to spend.
Uh-huh. And that, look what the next step would be. Just like in Venezuela, the leaders out there are saying,
the next step is communism. You know that.
Yeah.
I know that.
They say, trust us. Let's not even worry about these elections. Trust us. We'll take care of you. And nope. That's what happens when you become reliant on a government and they provide everything for you. All the control is there. Then they'll take away your rights, which is contradictory to what this country was set up on, I believe.
Couldn't agree more.
Dr. Dean Waldman joins us. The biggest lie about health care. I love this conversation here in the United States. Senate working overtime to try to get something done by August. I don't know if it will, but we're going to get his take on that in his book, The Cancer and the American Health Care. Very interesting take. Coming up on KMOX.
Budweiser and KMOX present the Llewellyn Stumble. Enjoy food and drink specials and Budweiser giveaways, the ball game, and make sure you register to win a trip to Kansas City to each watch party. The next one is Tuesday, July 18th at the Llewellyn's in St. Charles. Winners will receive a round-trip Amtrak ticket to KC for a pregame party at Llewellyn's Pub, Lee's Summit. Take in a ball game and stay overnight at a Drury Inn and Suites. Get more details at KMOX.com/watch. Presented by VisitKC.com, Llewellyn's Pub, Drury Hotels, and New Bowl Toyota. News Radio 1120 KMOX, St. Louis's news, traffic, and weather.
If you were to try to reverse engineer healthcare, how would you do it? Continuing our conversation with Dr. Waldman, you can find his work on The Hill and Fox News, looking at multiple articles and opinion pieces he's put out. But his latest book, The Cancer in the American Healthcare System, tell us a little bit about what you found there.
Well, what I did, it's not fair for the author to speak about a book, but what I did was actually useful and interesting. All I did was I said, as you may not know, I in addition to having an MD, I also have an MBA. So I know a fair amount about business and accounting and money flow and stuff like that. And so I said, well, you know, I could look at healthcare as though we're a sick patient. That's my doctor hat. Or I could look at healthcare as though we're a sick organization or system, as in the, you know, management stuff. Well, it turns out that you would handle both of them the same way. The first thing you would do is you'd look at the patient or look at the system and say, what's wrong with it? Then the next question you would ask is, What's the cause of what's wrong with this system?
Mm-hmm.
You wouldn't do anything until you figured out the cause. So what I did was I applied all those management tools and accounting techniques and so forth to healthcare as though the accounting techniques were x-rays and the, you know, the management and diagnostic tools were blood tests and stuff like that. And I just looked at healthcare as though it were a sick patient, and I came to a diagnosis of what the root cause of healthcare's dysfunction or illness or sickness, or call it whatever you want. And that's the basis of the book. And it leads an average person from where you are right now, which is, gee, I can't find a doctor, and you know, I can't afford insurance, and the government made all these promises, and I can't seem to actually realize them. What the hell is going on? And you go through until you figure out. The book helps you figure out. Helps you figure out. I don't tell you. You learn. Helps you figure out why the system doesn't work. And until you accept that why, you can't fix the system.
Very good.
You want me to give it away, I'll give it away, which is when you go through the whole process, it turns out that the cause of the illness in healthcare is Washington control.
Big surprise.
Well, you're not surprised, and other people may not be surprised, but a lot of people will go, gee, wait a minute. But isn't Washington responsible to give me my health care? Firstly, no.
Yeah.
And secondly, let's assume they were responsible to give you your health care. Are they doing the job?
Dr. Dean Waldman, your latest article, The Biggest Lie About Health Care, hint it involves the government, ties right back into it. I had a great, great time talking to you here today. Very insightful. I hope we can bring you on the show sometime in the future.
It would be my pleasure.
I think we will, because he's a regular columnist on The Hill. You can read his stuff, his opinion pieces there. Wow, I can't wait to see what happens in the next month as they try to sort out what they're going to do. Are they going to repeal and replace? I talked to him a little bit off air, and I said, okay, what are your take? Are they actually going to do something here in the Senate? And he said, no, they're not. There's no way they're going to find enough support with what they got now. I feel like if I were to put a percentage on it, I told him I feel like there's a 30% chance there's a repeal. I think there's a 0% chance they have a replacement. But he feels like there's 0% chance for anything. I want to bring this up. And if there's anything you heard you want to bring up, 314-436-7900 or 800-925-1120. And I'm going to tie this into what's happening over in England. Baby Charlie Gard is going to have a new day in court tomorrow, Thursday. The UK High Court will get back together and they'll look at new evidence regarding baby Charlie Gard. This is the fight that two parents have brought up their child. I mean, just in a very heartbreaking way, has a rare genetic disorder. As far as I can tell, cannot move. The little boy, 11 months old, can't move his arms or legs, depends on a feeding tube and a breathing tube to live. It's every parent's worst nightmare that their child has to suffer this way. They were not getting the care in England through the hospital, and the hospital said, it's time to end your child's life. We're going to allow this to happen. The family, the parents, heartbroken, said, I want to exhaust every option. We can't give our child up yet. And they raised a bunch of money, but the hospital said, it's inhumane for your child to take this care. We are going to pull the plug on him. They said, wait. Here in the United States, President Donald Trump even sounded it and said, bring him over to the U.S. And doctors over here have an experimental treatment they want to try. Court said, no, you're not allowed to make the decision of your child. We're going to allow that child to die. The Pope, the Holy Pope, said, bring him over to the Vatican. We'll let our healthcare people try. And the courts in England said, no, you as the parents have no say in this. They went back to the High Court, and now tomorrow they're going to see if they can figure this out. It's a very complex and sad situation. These parents, I don't know how these parents could go day to day without 24/7 crying around the clock. Only the family, the doctors treating Charlie, and now the legal teams involved know the details of complex issues that define the situation, they said in a statement. Charlie's doctors in Britain argue that he has no hope of surviving, thus they have to allow him to die. There's another story that came out. Quality of life is more important than life at all. Here in the United States, we have a healthcare system flawed that's going through a transition that could be reversed. We could try to at least turn away what we know will be a failing system in Obamacare and try to reverse the course and get it back on track. We have that opportunity that the Republicans in Congress right now are absolutely throwing away and flushing down the toilet. If they don't get it done in the next month, there's some serious problems with the Congress right now, worse than I could ever imagine. And I know there's a lot of problems. If for some reason we get to the point where we're like this here in the United States with healthcare, as in, if the government's paying for it, they have a say in what happens to you. They have a say in what happens to your children. If the government's paying for it, they have control over you. Keep that in mind. Now, the op-ed that came out of The Guardian is, quality of life is more important than life at all cost. Here's a couple of the different people that sounded off on this. I'm just going to read a few excerpts. As one who has severely disabling condition, I would infinitely rather trust the health service, the NHS, its expert clinics in British judiciary than the Trump, the Pope, and the parents. Basically, it says, in whether I live and die, when it comes to that, you'd rather trust the doctors to say, let me die. Well, it's one thing to say that as an adult who can make a decision. It's another thing to make that decision for someone else's children. That's where the issue comes in. It's a terrible one, and this poor child, but why wouldn't you default to the parents to make the decision for their own child? Why would you allow the government to make the decision for the kids? Here's another op-ed that was in there from Donald Manning from Maryside. Malcolm Pittock states that the individual is the person who should decide what their own best interests are. For individuals like Charlie who lack capacity, the decision must be made by others. And by that, they say others are the government, not the parents. Here's one from Peter. Each tragic case of brain damage is different, but in this case, Charlie Gard is not being forced to die. He is being forced to live. No cure is in sight. Well, that's debatable because the parents who have their own funding, $1 million+, close to $2 million in funding from the support of their community and people that all over the world has stepped up. All they want to do is give this treatment a shot. They want to try it and see if it could work. Why wouldn't you let the parents, in their own way, feel like this is what's best for their child? It's the same thing, and I'm sorry to bring up Hillary Clinton here, but the whole idea of it takes a village to raise a child, the whole idea to say that you as a parent don't have rights over your children, it's what the people in the government or the people, a board of people that aren't related or even have any best interest in mind, it's up to them to decide what's best for your kid is insane. And that's it was her whole premise of that one book she came up, right? It takes a village. That was the whole premise. It takes a village to raise a child. Well, I'll tell you right now, I'm not going to raise my child based on the values of someone I don't know. I'm not going to allow my child to be raised up in ways that I don't agree with. Because what, you think my kid should bow down to the things you believe in? No, thank you. I'm going to raise my children differently. And you know what? In my household, I'll raise my child biblically, and we'll praise the Lord in our household, all right? It's kind of like someone coming in and saying, you shouldn't doctrinate your kids by taking them to church, all right? It's essentially the same thing that's happening here in healthcare. It'd be like saying that to a religion. So I'm going to tell you right now, if you think this panel in England better knows what's best for this child, call in and give me your best argument. 314-436-7900, 800-925-1120. Jerome, you called in, but I'm going to have to take you right after break. We're running late. Coming up on KMOX.
It's All-Star Game Break Week, and the Cards are off until Friday when they take on the Pittsburgh Pirates. We're your home for the best Cardinals coverage. KMOX.
You give healthcare a bad name, bad name. All right. Thought I'd give that a shot. Yeeks. All right, I'm a terrible singer. I ask my wife sometimes, I say, how's my singing? She goes, yee. She pulls her collar. I go, yee. Not that good. I get it. Let's go to Jerome, who's calling in from Illinois. Hey, Jerome, thanks for weighing in on this. So we're talking about healthcare, and we just had that great interview, I thought, from Dr. Dean Waldman. And then, looking at an update, we could find the fate of this 11-month-old in the UK by tomorrow as they're going to take up this case again. What's your thoughts on the state of healthcare here?
Well, I think it's a hot mess. I mean, it's like they're getting a little bit of it done right, and then they're getting it completely wrong.
Yeah.
They're getting people in there taking care of them that wouldn't be able to afford health care in the first place, but then people that were able to afford health care just fine before, rates are going up, thus making a hardship on them. And if you're like really, really poor, you get health insurance because
Medicare, Medicaid, depending on your age and what your income is, sure.
Right. And then if you're rich, it's not an issue because you can pay as you go. Or you can afford insurance.
Well, let's back up. Did you hear that part where Dr. Dean Waldman, he mentioned that since the expansion happened, that doctors had to stop taking Medicare and Medicaid patients because they just couldn't afford to anymore. They had so many of them coming in. So, yeah, you might be able to get in, but you're not going to find a doctor. And the whole, if you like your doctor, you can keep your doctor. That promise was thrown right out the window.
Oh, yeah, and it wasn't even like, well, we got to do it this way. I understand that. Like, when your parents promise you something, the good ones will say, well, hon, son, whatever, we can't do it because of this.
Yeah.
But when they just say, you know, to heck with you, we're doing it this way, your feelings don't count, your opinion doesn't count, we're doing it like this, shut up and get in the car, and we're going.
Uh-huh.
You know?
I felt like with Obamacare, they were promised a trip to Disneyland, but instead they took him to the dentist.
Yeah, and he didn't even get the free little gift at the end.
Yeah, here's your toothbrush. Enjoy it, kid.
Right. I got a mid-level job where I make money, but it's just above minimum wage. So they offered me health insurance when I got hired. Mm-hmm. But the deductibles are so high. And the weekly output is so high, I'll just say it takes a large portion of my weekly wage, over 10%, to get the insurance, and I don't make that much in the first place. And then, like I said, the deductibles are so high, it would almost be stupid for me to have it unless I had children, and I don't have kids.
For you, 10% of your income was going straight to healthcare right off the top?
Yeah, it would be because
the deductible, at least, okay. Not even the premium, or that's the premium. Excuse me, the deductible. What's your deductible at work?
Well, I know the premium is something like between $30 and $40 a week. I make a little over $300. I'm not trying to tell too much, but I might as well because we're talking numbers.
Okay.
And I think the deductible is, I don't know exactly because I didn't get the insurance. But
is it $5,000 or over?
Yeah, it's like that much for, emergency care. And then, like, doctor visits themselves is like, I think $50 or $70-something. It's kind of high.
Oh, yeah. I've found it firsthand. My former job in Indiana, my wife, right at the end of the year in December, was walking down the stairs with our 2-year-old and slipped and broke her ankle. She ended up breaking all 3 bones that that hold your foot to your leg. And she had to have surgery, 7 or 8 pins or whatever it was put in there in a plate. And I found out very quickly that not only was my deductible blown out the window, I still had to pay on top of that, above the deductible, because once you get to a certain part, they cover more, but you're still paying. So even once you hit that deductible, you're still going to pay more than that.
What a chip.
I know. It's insane. Well, we were paying and paying and paying, and you keep getting bills, and you don't know where they're coming from, and you got to call and ask them because you thought you paid everything. And then, a couple weeks later, you get another bill a couple weeks later, and they just keep trickling in, and they never stop. It's insane. And all the follow-ups and everything on top of that. I can't remember how much money we paid. It was an insane amount of money we paid.
You could have bought yourself a real shiny car, I'm sure, with it.
Easy. But I'll tell you what also people don't realize is that when we had all these bills and after the surgery, It was like, I don't know, I'm trying to think. It was like $6,000 or $7,000 after out-of-pocket deductible stuff. Ton of money. I called them up and I said, all right, because we had a health savings account. Luckily, health savings accounts are the greatest, by the way. I think everyone should be doing them if given the option, do it. But we had money saved, and I called them and I said, how much would you take off if I just pay you in cash right now? Because I knew how much money I had in my health savings account. And they said, okay, they basically cut the bill in half if I were to pay in cash and ask them. So anyone that's listening right now, if you have a lot of medical bills and you just call them up and say, how much would it cost if I paid you in cash right now? And you may find out that you might not be crippled with debt if you have something like a health savings account, if you're lucky enough. So don't forget something like that. You can save yourself a lot of money just by asking questions like that.
Right. I am, and as a younger producer, I chose not to do the insurance. So I get a nice little fine every year from the Internal Revenue Service of like...
Because you're in Illinois. Like, yeah.
Yeah, I'm in this tax state.
Oh, good luck with even more that you're going to find. Man, I feel bad for people living in Illinois right now, not knowing what their government's going to be doing or what kind of taxes they're going to shove on you. It's it's a little weary. A little weary, I would be.
I'm sorry, sir. Go on.
No, Jerome, I just want to say thank you for calling in. We got news coming up here, but we got to get going. Call back anytime. It's always good hearing from you.
Okay, and that baby thing, that's horrible what they're doing. Thank you. Goodbye.
Thank you. It's sad. I mean, we have to allow the parents to make the decision for their children. We do. The time the government should be stepping in is if, for example, there's abuse. This is not an abuse case. This is a deciding who they're going to treat case. And they're deciding that in this instance, they're not abusing the child. They're not malnourishing the child. They're not holding them back from school. They're not doing these things that social services would have to step in for. This is literally the parents trying to save the kid's life. Overnight America, KMOX.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.